It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful, foggy Kodiak, Alaska. We're out at the airport. They are showing 96% humidity. They have east winds to 7. And they are showing only half mile of visibility. They might be getting a little more. It's 50 degrees in Kodiak. Coming up on the Midday Report, former Mayor Amy Williams has been settling in as the current Kodiak Island Borough Manager. KMXT's Brian Benoit sat down with her to talk about the transition. And some Alaska lawmakers are still holding out a glimmer of hope for enough legislators to override Governor Mike Dunleavy's public school funding veto. In addition to that, public schools in Alaska are looking at the federal government's money for their school meals. Inflation in that regard has been steep.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. The Supreme Court has handed the Biden administration a win for its immigration priorities, ruling that Texas and Louisiana did not have the legal standing to sue. The Texas Newsroom's Julian Aguilar reports.
In 2021, the Biden administration issued a memo directing immigration agents to prioritize deporting unauthorized immigrants who pose a threat to public safety or national security, narrowing the scope of who can be targeted. The attorneys general of Louisiana and Texas argued the Biden administration was ignoring current law and that the enforcement memo would allow other criminals to roam freely about the country. The Supreme Court's opinion, written by Justice Brett Kavanaugh, called the state's lawsuit unusual and said they did not, quote, cite any precedent, history, or tradition of courts ordering the executive branch to change its arrest or prosecution policies. I'm Julian Aguilar in El Paso.
Attorney General Merrick Garland says the Justice Department's leaders did not interfere in a probe of the president's son. NPR's Carrie Johnson reports on the continuing fallout from Hunter Biden's plea deal on misdemeanor tax charges.
Republicans in Congress have criticized the plea agreement as a sweetheart deal for Hunter Biden, and two agents at the Internal Revenue Service have raised questions about whether the Justice Department slow-walked the investigation, allowing the statute of limitations on some potential charges to expire. Attorney General Merrick Garland says the U.S. attorney in Delaware, a holdover from the Trump administration, never asked him to name a special counsel.
He was given complete authority to make all decisions on his own.
Garland says attacks on the Justice Department and the FBI are unfounded and dangerous for democracy. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
Starbucks staff at 150 stores are set to strike over the company's approach to pride decorations. NPR's Alina Selyuk reports.
Starbucks Workers United, which represents stores that have voted to unionize, last week began sharing stories of workers who said they'd been told not to put up pride decorations or directed to remove existing ones by local company leaders. They offered various reasons. Starbucks responded that its policy had not changed, there was no ban, and that it strongly supported LGBTQ plus workers. The chain did acknowledge that it gives autonomy on store decor to regional managers. The union says the strike begins at the Seattle Roastery. Alina Selyuk, NPR News.
Canada's Transportation Safety Board is investigating after a submersible imploded this week near the wreckage of the Titanic, killing 5. Experts say the Washington-based company OceanGate long ignored warnings the vessel could not withstand the pressure of the dive. 36 people are feared dead after their boat capsized between Tunisia and Italy, according to the International Organization for Migration. It comes as this year has seen a surge in migrant deaths in the Mediterranean. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. It's been about 2 months since Amy Williams went from being Kodiak Island Borough's mayor to its manager. KMXT's Brian Benoit sat down with Williams to talk about how the transition is going.
Williams had her first day on the job last month. Since then, she's been busy meeting all of the staff and helped create the budget the borough assembly passed earlier this month. She says the biggest transition was the move from sharing her opinions on policy to executing the assembly's decisions.
It's a little bit different not having involvement in making the policy, and now just instead of carrying out the policy, but we're not micromanaged by the assembly, so there's still a lot of decision-making and figuring out the best way to get things done.
The first budget drafts came out while Williams was still mayor. She says reviewing budgets from that position and her experience as an assembly member helped prepare her for creating versions herself.
I made sure to ask more questions than I probably ever had before and just try to dig deep and try to come up with a better understanding of what was going on and what the needs were.
Williams's predecessor is back to heading the Public Works Department. She says he and the other department leaders have been instrumental as she's been learning the ropes of the job.
I think I was there a month before I actually was in charge of purchasing something on my own. Just compartmentalizing what the priorities are and learning the stuff to make the day-to-day operations work. And now I'm just starting to branch out into some of the other stuff. But it's I felt very supported.
Williams recently visited the villages of Carluck and Larson Bay to meet leaders there and get updated on projects in those communities. Her next plans as manager include reviewing the borough's leases and finding staff for the municipality's open positions. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
Some Alaska lawmakers are still holding out a glimmer of hope for a groundswell of support to override Governor Mike Dunleavy's line item budget veto on public school funding. Representative Calvin Schragy is an Anchorage nonpartisan who leads the House's largely Democratic minority caucus. He says he asked House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Wasilla Republican, on Wednesday to poll House members about holding a special session to attempt the veto overrides.
I think it's important that we at least do our due diligence in taking the time to figure out where members are at and whether two-thirds of the members of the legislature support going to special session to override this veto.
The legislature can call a special session with a vote of two-thirds or 40 members. If a special session is convened, then there's an even higher bar to override budget vetoes. That would take three-quarters or 45 members of the full legislature. Schragy says he heard back from Tilton on Thursday afternoon. She told him an informal poll of her members led her to believe there wasn't anywhere close to the votes for a special session. Tilton's caucus of mostly Republicans has the votes to make or break both supermajority votes. The governor's veto to public school funding was the single biggest budget reduction he made. The legislature had adopted a major increase intended to put roughly $680 more per student into schools. The governor cut that one-time increase in half. Tilton said in a statement from her caucus that she believes the cut balances adequate education funding with fiscal responsibility. Still, Schragy says it will take some time for individual school districts to reckon with the latest funding changes, which affect this coming school year.
I think as we learn the impacts of such a low number, the votes may actually be there for both a special session and for overriding this veto. So I think the question is still out there as to whether the votes are there, and I think it's going to take some time for people to know the answer, both collectively and individually, to that question.
Senator Kathy Geisel is an Anchorage Republican and the Senate Majority Leader. Her caucus was responsible for the budget that passed. Geisel said she did not support the governor's vetoes and was far more pessimistic.
No, I don't think there's a path at all. I think we'd be hard pressed to get to 45 legislators that would be willing to override the vetoes.
Meanwhile, the governor can also call the legislature back for a special session on any topic, at which point the Constitution requires lawmakers to reconsider vetoed bills. Jeff Turner, a spokesperson for the governor, said on Thursday it has yet to be determined if the governor will call the legislature back for a special session. Alongside Governor Mike Dunleavy's vetoes to education funding, Alaska schools are about to find out how much money they will receive from the federal government for school meals this year. As school districts look ahead to their 2024 budgets, many are under pressure because of steep inflation in the price of food. KFSK's Thomas Copeland has this report.
It's a Friday in June, but the Petersburg Elementary School's cafeteria is still teeming with kids. Lunch lady Kitty Brantuis knows them all by name.
Hi, Natalie. Do you want teriyaki chicken or sweet chili chicken?
Terry chicken.
And beside the Terry chicken, there's a full salad bar, too.
From this end, we've got lettuce, bean salad, fresh carrots.
Now,
and
in the summertime,
corn,
the federal
cucumbers.
Government covers this food for any child who wants it. But that's not the case in the school year. When the semester starts back up this fall, Alaska schools have access to less funding for school meals. And that means they will have to face the full force of inflation. Carly Johnson McIntosh is in charge of the meals at Petersburg Schools. She's watched the cost of her food orders skyrocket.
So if you look at chicken, that has doubled in price compared to what you were able to get it in 2020 or 2021.
According to the latest data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the price of food in schools has shot up this year by a chart-topping 294%.
In 2010, when I started, a weekly grocery bill was about $2,000. Now, 1 week's worth of groceries is about $5,000. But the biggest part of that is over the past 2 years.
How school meals are paid for during the semester gets pretty complicated. Basically, the federal government reimburses Alaska schools for many of the meals they serve, but not all of them. Depending on household income, some kids are eligible for free meals, some are eligible for reduced meals, and some pay full price. In Petersburg, more than 60% of students are eligible for free or reduced meals. That's a little under the statewide average of 3/4. In the last year, schools have been able to claw back between $6 and $7 for each free or reduced meal. But the problem is, that reimbursement rate just hasn't kept up with soaring food bills. And that leaves schools with two options. The first is to get thrifty, like Johnson McIntosh in Petersburg.
We try to buy bulk orders to help reduce the cost, and then we plan menus so that if we have any leftovers of one day, we can easily use it in another thing without having any waste or overhead and leftover product.
The second option is to increase the prices for the students who do pay, and that's exactly what the Petersburg School District plans to do. They'll be proposing a 25-cent increase to the standard meal charge at the next school board meeting in August. It might not seem like much, but 5 days a week for a few children, and their quarters start to add up. But even if they do both of those two things, many Alaska schools will still feel the pinch. Trevor Bridgewater is the president of the Alaska School Nutrition Association.
It's definitely a fact that schools are caught between the rising costs of food and a stagnant reimbursement rate, and we are constantly behind the curve on how to fund our programs.
And Bridgewater says Alaska schools face an additional problem.
Unlike other states, the state of Alaska does not provide any additional reimbursement monies to school nutrition programs in Alaska.
The federal reimbursement rates for 2024 are expected any day now. Bridgewater says that if the rate increase isn't enough, schools may have to search for cutbacks, maybe some big ones.
Literally, whether or not certain schools can afford to continue serving meals in schools, the other option is to look at food products that cost less. And food products that cost less are usually of lesser quality.
And back in Petersburg, cutbacks of any kind could face stiff resistance from already picky cafeteria customers.
I don't like it when they serve banana bread.
I don't like spaghetti.
I don't like the carrot very much.
Why not?
I don't know.
Well, 72 kids fed today. That just leaves the washing up. For KFSK, I'm Thomas Copeland.
The head of a new Anchorage-based airline says the company hopes to bring hundreds of jobs and a substantial increase in tourism business to Alaska. Speaking at an unveiling of their new first-class lounge at Ted Stevens International Airport on Wednesday, Rob McKinney said the new airline will employ 250 people locally and eventually add billions to the economy by extending the tourism season.
We believe that ultimately we can take the seasonality out of tourism in Alaska. And if you think about what that translates, I mean, everyone just goes as hard as they can for 3.5-4 months. But if you can translate that to 12 months, the amount of jobs that will be created and not be seasonal anymore, it'll just be transformative for the state.
The company's business model relies on Anchorage being a halfway point between major cities in Eastern Asia and the U.S. McKinney says the concept has already been proven by Iceland Air.
Look at the Atlantic. You can easily go nonstop across the Atlantic, yet Iceland Air has phenomenal business. They have 50 airplanes, and they're all stopping in Keflavik there in Iceland. So it can be done.
McKinney says by bringing year-round travelers, Iceland increased their tourism by 500%. If Alaska were to even double its current tourism, that would translate to billions of dollars in new revenue, according to McKinney. Northern Pacific's first flights will be between L.A. and Las Vegas starting next month as proof of concept, and they hope to have the Trans-Pacific flights up and running by spring of 2024. A Kenai theater group is in the midst of a production of The Lion King with a cast of more than 40 young people. Halfway through the run, KDLL's Riley Board visited a pickup rehearsal to talk to the cast and experience the music.
A few years after the classic Disney film hit screens, a stage adaptation of The Lion King became famous for its complex, colorful costumes. Decades later, the same iconic story and vibrant style is on the stage in Kenai in a production of The Lion King Jr.
Run away, Scar. Run away and never return.
As you wish, Your Majesty.
The show is being put on by Kenai performers and features the elaborate masks, costumes, and face paint characteristic of the Broadway show. Musically, it features all of the well-loved classics from the original, like this track about a catchphrase and life philosophy. But the show also features less familiar songs, unique to the stage version of the show. This song, Shadowland, was written for the 1997 Broadway adaptation. It's performed here by Jaylee Webster, who plays adult Nala. The five main cast members, all high school students, gather outside the auditorium during intermission to talk about their experiences. They all agree that the best thing about the show has been meeting new friends. The five main characters come from three different high schools, but are all united in this performance. Webster goes to Soldotna High School.
Because this is my first production with Kenai performers, so I've gotten introduced to so many new people. They've all been all people that I usually wouldn't like interact with in Sohai productions, and it's just opened me to like a new world of people.
For some, this show has also been an opportunity to show off a new side of themselves. Josiah Burton plays the show's villain, a grizzled lion named Scar, and says there's a certain charm in playing the bad guy.
I can't overact, honestly, especially a Disney villain. I get to live in the id section of my brain, and I get to act without consequences. I get to do so many things on stage that I would never be able to get away with in real life.
The cast has already run their first four shows, and say it's been an exercise in learning how an audience will react. Jackson Hooper, who plays adult Simba, says it's easy to forget that jokes are funny when you perform them night after night. That changes when the audience comes in, and the lines pay off with a big laugh. Webster says it's important to play with each performance, to not grow too formulaic, and maintain the fun. And they all agree about what makes a good show.
What has been the best show so far?
Our Saturday night.
Saturday night, all the way.
Oh my god. What was so special about that?
The audience was just so nice. The audience was loud. We love loud audiences. Yes.
Gavin Hunt, who plays Mufasa, says that kind of energy has been his favorite thing about being in the show.
Saturday night, they were like screaming and stuff. It was so satisfying to hear all that work getting paid off all in one place at the same time. It was just a real joy to hear people enjoyed all the effort and work we put into the show.
Mm-hmm. Hooper, the Nikiski high schooler who plays adult Simba, says the audience impacts the performance.
They give us a lot of energy, and the more energy that we get, like, we gain more confidence, and then we're willing to play more.
All of the performers in The Lion King are under 18, but Oshie Broussard, who plays Rafiki, says not to be deterred by the name of the show.
When people see the word junior on this production, don't underestimate this cast.
Broussard closes out the show with another song unique to the stage adaptation. It's called He Lives in You, and it's an ode to the relationship between Simba and his father, even after Mufasa's death.
Night and the spirit of life calling Mamela.
In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Fear of the child answers. I am a Mela. Un basket of cocoa. Wait. There's no mountain too great.
GM agrees to help clean up so-called forever chemicals. I'm Rick Carr with the Marketplace Minute. For decades, the company made substances called PFAS to fireproof materials, but the chemicals don't break down in nature, so they can contaminate water. Hundreds of cities sued 3M, which has now agreed to pay as much as $12.5 billion to settle. More than 3,000 baristas at over 150 Starbucks plan to strike next week. The union Starbucks Workers United alleges the company ordered workers to remove LGBTQ+ decorations for Pride Month. The coffee chain denies the charge. Remember that stretch of Interstate 95 in Philadelphia that collapsed not too long ago? It's reopening today, less than 2 weeks after the blaze that destroyed it. I'm Rick Carr with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate investment and technology. See a brighter way.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 23rd day of June, the year 2023. The sun rose at 5:08. It will set again at 11:15. That will give us 18 hours and 7 minutes of foggy daylight, a loss of 16 seconds. Our record high for this date was 79 degrees, set in 1953. Our record low was 35, set in 1966, and it is currently 50 degrees. And out at the airport, they are showing east winds at 7 miles per hour. They're claiming they're down to half mile of visibility. They may have a little bit more. 30% chance of rain for the rest of the day today, mainly before 4 this afternoon. Mostly cloudy skies for today and tonight and tomorrow. High near 53 today, southeast winds to 10. Overnight low about 48. And for tomorrow, rain is likely, mainly after 4 p.m. That rain's expected to go overnight Saturday night and into Sunday. Also, look for these light southeast winds to blow up a little bit on Saturday night, gusts as high as 25. Well, let's check in on the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 9, date issued 10 a.m. on June 23rd. The Outer Katoy Bay section of the Afognak District will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Saturday, June 24th. As previously announced, there will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, June 23rd to 9 p.m. Saturday, June 24th in the Outer Aikuluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. The following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Saturday, June 24th. The Cape Alatak, Humpy Dead Man, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District. following areas remain open until further notice: the Duck and Iqaluit Bay sections of the Afognak District, Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purseine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced until further notice in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
The tide just turned here on the east side. We had a low tide at 12:11 about 15 minutes ago. That was a 0-foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 6:55 this afternoon and be 6.3 feet. Over on the west side, you're about to have your low tide at 12:36 this afternoon. That will be a 0.4-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:11 of 11.1 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast from Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 miles. Southeast 15 today, east 15 tonight, southeast 15 tomorrow. 4-foot seas today, coming down to 3 feet for tonight and tomorrow. But on Saturday night, east winds to 30 knots and seas to 9 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, northeast 15 today with seas to 4 feet, turning to the east tonight with 3-foot seas. And for tomorrow, northeast 15 and seas to 3 feet. But in the Shelikof, on Saturday night, northeast 30, seas to 8 feet. Well, tonight's the night for the Pride Zumba and Margaritas. That's happening at Bernie's Bar for 21 and up, obviously. Check in at 6 p.m. Event starts at 7. And the Rainbow Run is coming up on Saturday. Registration begins at 9:30 a.m. at the Kodiak High School parking lot. 5K starts at 10. 1 mile starts at 10:15. Color run option this year, the run, walk, start, and finish at the Kodiak High School parking lot. Post-race celebration immediately following, including DJ Mark and his Rebo Spin family-friendly drag show in the auditorium. Please bring a change of clothes or something to sit on if you decide to do the color run so you don't get the auditorium seats all messy.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the June 23rd edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. This week is a perfect example of how Kodiak Island has earned the moniker Emerald Isle. A couple of days of sun, some warmer temps, accompanied by long daylight hours, and bam! The green has exploded. Nourished by the sun and refreshed by the mist, the pushke, alders, cottonwoods, and grasses seem to be growing exponentially. The spruce trees are not immune to that explosive growth either. The trees are loaded up with hundreds of spruce tips ready to pop out. Every few years, conditions are just right, and the trees seem to rain pollen. Or perhaps spew is a better verb choice here. You know, you might be a little sneezy when the air is visibly filled with a pollen haze and the ground and seas are covered in golden dust. Although the fields are getting greener by the day, the wildflowers are struggling to bloom. The cold, wet spring and early summer have set them behind schedule. Normally by this time of year, there are wildflowers everywhere you look. This summer, I have to go looking for them. I did spot some shooting stars, wild geraniums, rock crests, cinquefoil, buttercups, and a few yellow paintbrush in bloom, mostly along the cliff faces where the warmth of the sun hangs on longer than in the meadows. In the meadows, I saw chocolate lilies that are open and many more that are ready to pop any day. The false hellebore is beginning to open as well, and there are salmonberry blossoms galore. I hold out hope for more blooms to come and a good berry season. In the meantime, I hope you take the time to take a walk in the woods on one of these misty, foggy days. The forest is especially green and magical then. Enjoy. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.